Rothman and Ice present Big Game Preview.
Sponsored by Hinderer Motorsports.
All right, we can't get enough of Behind Enemy Lines, and we'll do it with the Oregon Duck beat reporter for the Oregonian, James Crepia. James, good to have you back.
Appreciate you guys for having me.
All right, man. So anything new between late this morning and now? What about Kayvon Thibodeau? Can you confirm that he's with the team? Is he doing anything with them today? Or are they just keeping him rest, ice, compression, elevation? Like, what's happening with him?
Boy, I wish I could fill in like all those blanks for you, man. Believe me, I wish I was able to not only fill it in for you. I wish I would just know it myself. But alas, late in the week for college football, as you know, virtually everybody is pretty buttoned up. Especially, I guess Oregon did travel and landed in Columbus last night. All I know at the moment is based off just the various posts from players upon landing and all that, that he did make the trip. So. Obviously an encouraging sign. That said, I don't believe there are even the quote-unquote usual travel restrictions in terms of travel squad restrictions that may normally be there because this is an early non-conference game, because Oregon's not even in class yet. So they may be able to bring more people, but they may have to declare a squad ahead of time in terms of who's actually eligible to play. But I need a little bit of clarity from that myself. You know, it's been a minute since we've all been in this kind of situation, you know, with a true non-conference and under the circumstances. But bottom line, KT made the trip. We did not speak to him this week. All we got was from Mario earlier in the week, and it's wait and see, and it's day by day. And, you know, in terms of just reading the tea leaves, we didn't see him milling about with some of the other players coming in and out of the weight room or off the practice field. We don't have practice access these days, but that said, there's like 30 different ways that players can leave the practice field. So just because he didn't come in front of us doesn't mean that he wasn't there at all. Yeah. He could have been getting treatment early in the week, could have returned to on the field Thursday or today. There's just a lot of unknown there. But obviously it's the most important ankle heading into this game and perhaps the most important ankle in all of college football this weekend.
You're right about that, man. No question. Wanted to ask you about this Oregon offense and how you think they plan to attack this defense of Ohio State. Last week, Minnesota with some really good success along the ground. Like, what should Ohio State fans be looking for as far as what Oregon's bringing to the table offensively this week?
So how I think they'll attack it versus how I would attack it if I were Oregon may be two different things. But I do think ultimately there is a level of commonality insofar as I do think they're going to run the football a pretty good bit, or certainly attempt to. And that starts with C.J. Verdell. He's a back-to-back 1,000-yard rusher in 2018, 2019, has played through just a long list of injuries. But last year, injured his thumb in the second game of the season, opened the short year that was for the Pac-12 with back-to-back 100-yard games, and Oregon's 9-1 when he runs for 100 yards. And that's enormous. And unfortunately, he injured his thumb in that second game against Washington State, played through the injury for three games, and then missed the Pac-12 title game, missed the Fiesta Bowl. Now, as important as he is, and yes, they have a second back in Travis Dye, and they have a lot of talented younger backs who just didn't get on the field last week from a carry standpoint, those guys will be a very, very, very big factor. No question. To me, it starts at Verdell. Dye is really useful and explosive out of the backfield in the pass game. So is Verdell at times. But Dye has the higher top-end speed, more of the scat back type body size and whatnot.
James, to me,
that's where the commonality is. I think it has to start with the ground game. Do they have the potential for explosive passes? Absolutely.
James Crepia with us, Oregon Ducks beat reporter for the Oregonian. Let me ask you about this defense and trying to contain C.J. Stroud. If they have to do it without Thibodeau, what do they have defensively without him, do you feel? I know it's hard to know. And then that secondary, trying to keep track of Olave and Wilson and company. Do they have the horses to stay with them?
Sure. So in terms of the front seven, with him, obviously it's a different kind of an animal. But they do have some really talented players there still. One, in terms of who would be playing either in place of Kayvon Thibodeau or just behind him and still be a big part of the rotation, played with him. On a sack early on last week where KT really was responsible for it, though Braden Swinson recorded the sack. He benefited from it. So he's certainly a player who will be a big part of tomorrow, regardless, whether he's, you know, all the reps that KT was getting or he's getting just a fraction thereafter. Adrian Jackson Jr., another designated pass rusher. You'll see him more on third downs, probably, I would say. Off the other edge, Mace Foon is going to be there a lot. Again, another former four-star top-end player out of Mater Dei High School in Southern California, the powerhouse program that is. So they have a lot there. Then in the inside linebacker spots, Noah Sewell, former five-star, freshman All-American last year, tied for the team leading tackles last year. Really, really hard tackler, playmaker over the middle. And Justin Flo, who also is in that regard, where he missed last year, tore his meniscus in the opening game, basically missed the season. Had 14 tackles last week, was Pac-12 Freshman of the Week, forced the fumble late that led to the game-tying field goal. Now, there is some rumor mill, unsubstantiated murmurings about Justin Flo's availability for tomorrow. That said, no one has been able to definitively confirm the fire to where that smoke is coming. No one has been able to definitively refute the fire to where that smoke is coming. So do they have other bodies at the inside linebacker position too? It's starting to get thin behind those two five stars who are the number one and two inside linebacker recruits in 2020. They have the bodies, but obviously you start losing multiple five stars potentially. And that would be, I mean, there's very few teams in America who can kind of overcome that kind of loss.
You laid out what this team can bring to the table with their rushing attack with Verdell and Dye and his versatility. What about the playmakers, the guys on the outside? Who should we be looking at to potentially make an impact?
So from a truly reliable standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, Johnny Johnson III is one of the super senior receivers on this team. He's somebody who they feel like they can go to in a lot of spots, can play all the receiver positions. He's probably most cut out to play the Z, but he could end up playing all of them. Micah Pittman has, I think, the best pro potential of the returning receivers from this team. They have a nucleus, though, going forward with a lot of freshmen, and we only had to see one of them make a catch last week. Another one that was a bit more limited, and a third who just came in and arrived in the summer and did well in fall camp, but I don't think we really saw him almost at all last week. If he did, it was on special teams. So do they have weapons that may not even have numbers yet just because they've only played one career game? Yeah, they do, and the freshman receivers are definitely big threats. And I think, frankly, that their lack of production last week was somewhat in part to just the fact of the way the game played out and that they didn't necessarily want to show a lot on tape to Ohio State of what these guys can do. So there are options, but from the truly, like, what you're most confident in by way of the outside threats and those playmakers, you got to start with Johnson and Pittman to me, and Pittman in particular. He can be a game-breaker in various different roles in the receiving corps, and yeah, those would be the guys I would start with. But those freshmen, Troy Franklin and Dante Thornton in particular, could also be very dynamic weapons if they get involved.
Yeah, boy, they almost gambled. If they didn't want to show something, they played that all the way to the end, man.
Oh, no, it was not a pretty or impressive performance by any stretch of the imagination.
All right, James, in our final minute, we'll give it on the psychology of this game. It's been talked about all offseason. It's certainly going to be a huge one for both teams. Beat Ohio State here, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's on. I mean, Ryan Day hasn't lost a regular season game here. They haven't lost a game. Boy, I don't even know if they've lost a home game since maybe Baker Mayfield came in here and did it with Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. And this kid, Anthony Brown, taking over for Justin Herbert and all that. Give me the confidence level. Didn't have a good week one, like you said. Do they have flip the switch type mentality in this game? How intimidated will they be? They've never beaten Ohio State as a program.
I don't think that the factors that you lay out by way of, you know, yes, obviously they respect and appreciate the history that Ohio State has, both long term and most recent history by way of, like you referred to, not losing a home game since Baker Mayfield came in here week two of the 2017 season. They get all that. Having said that, overwhelming majority of this roster, you know, not Brown, he's a, you know, 6th year quarterback and a, you know, grad transfer, been in program 2 years. No, not a couple of the receivers who are super seniors. No, Verdell and Dye are juniors, but, you know, 5th year junior, 4th year junior. But you start getting a little bit lower down, mainly on the defensive side, admittedly. And a lot of these players are freshmen, 2nd year freshmen, 3rd year sophomores. They haven't gone through every which battle, and sometimes it's just ignorance is bliss in that, yeah, you know, in that sense. Like, they can respect it, but, you know, when you talk about, like, the intimidation factor, I don't think these guys, you know, I got to remember, guys, I realize, you know, nationally speaking, they've been a little out of the conversation. Don't get me wrong, but they are back-to-back Pac-12 champions. You know, this is a team that has its own degree of confidence with what it's capable of, too. Now, having said that, it's all relative. They have not made it to the playoff yet. They haven't gotten to that level and plateau in the sport yet. That's what they're aiming for and aspiring for. But I don't think they come in here as an intimidated group by any number of the factors like you lay out, either Ohio State's general dominance or the horseshoe and being a bigger building than pretty much all of them have ever played in. I think that's fun for us to talk about, but I really don't think that this is a team who's going to be – I don't think the stage, the magnitude of the stage will be too big. I think the talent gap may be too big, but I don't think the stage is too big.
Okay. James, good stuff, man. Thanks for setting the table for us. Enjoy the game, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.